You're tuned to WFHB
91.3
and 98.1 FM.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community.
And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM. Reporting live for WFHB, this is Maria McKinley.
And I'm Doug Storm. This is the Daily Local News for Monday, September 29, 2014.
A large portion of people make their decisions when they're actually in the voting booth.
With only 1 week left for voters to register for the November 4th election, the Monroe County Election Board discusses preparations for a seamless voting week.
Also coming up in the next half hour, Andrea Job, an original member of the volunteer team behind the Middleway House rooftop, talks about the importance of the project to shelter residents, their children, and those who volunteer on Activate, our weekly segment spotlighting people working for positive change in our community. But first, these local headlines.
Jimmy John's recently announced a data breach that could have compromised debit and credit card users at over 216 locations nationwide. The Indiana Daily Student reports the issue affected the restaurant's location on East 3rd Street in Bloomington between July 1st and August 3rd. At the Kirkwood Avenue location, data was compromised between July 3rd and August 1st. Compromised information includes cardholder name, debit or credit card numbers, expiration date, and verification codes. According to the IDS, the investigation is ongoing. Jimmy John's urges customers to check their credit card statements for suspicious activity and report any incidents to their bank or credit card company. The company says it has taken steps to prevent this from occurring in the future, so customers can now feel free to use their credit and debit cards at all locations.
Indiana is to receive $647,072 in grants from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services to prevent chronic diseases. HHS Secretary Sylvia M. Burrell states that grants will support programs aimed at reducing death and disability due to tobacco use, obesity, diabetes, heart disease, and stroke. The grants will be administered by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, or the CDC, and funded in part by the Affordable Care Act. Nationally, such chronic diseases are responsible for 7 of 10 deaths among Americans and account for more than 80% of the $2.7 trillion our nation spends annually on medical care.
The Indiana Department of Workforce Development recently announced that it will be receiving a $1.5 million grant from the U.S. Department of Labor. The funds are to be used for technology improvements to Indiana's unemployment insurance program. Indiana's share was part of a $66 million program integrity fund of the Federal Labor Department. The press release from the state claims that the money will be used to bolster program integrity and system improvement activities, including those aimed at combating fraud. Scott B. Sanders, Commissioner of the Indiana Department of Workforce Development, states, quote, "This grant allows us to fully implement upgrades that will enhance our unemployment insurance program," end quote. Beyond improving program integrity, grant recipient states also received funding for the implementation and expansion of interstate data exchange on unemployment insurance programs, job availability, employer fraud, and related information.
A recent study of approximately 119,000 Indiana students in grades 6 through 12 found a marked decline in drinking and smoking. The annual survey conducted by Indiana University's Indiana Prevention Resource Center since the 1990s collected information from 429 public and private schools around the state. The study found that 30% of high school seniors drink alcohol at least once a month, compared to 50% in 1993. 13% of young Indiana students smoke, compared to the national rate of 16%, and 13.5% of senior students reported they had abused prescription drugs, compared to a 21.5% national average. 37% of high school seniors had used marijuana, compared to the national average of 45.5%. Carol Nowick, a research associate for the center, believes increased law enforcement prohibiting tobacco and alcohol sales to minors and education efforts contributing to changes in attitude have had a growing impact on Indiana's youth.
A new CVS store is coming to downtown Bloomington. The city's Board of Zoning Appeals approved a permit for the business September 25th. The store plans to locate at the intersection of Kirkwood and Washington Street in the former Old National Bank building. CVS is the first company to go through the city's new process for vetting new chain businesses downtown. City Planner Eric Groilich presented the design to the board.
So staff has kind of, and the petitioner as well, has used that to try to come up with an appropriate sign package for this particular building that reflects the intent of the standardized business ordinance, which is to ensure that businesses moving into these select districts do not represent the typical corporate package and logo. So the petitioner and staff have worked together very closely to come up with a sign package that is unique for this location, certainly, as well as something that is complementary to the surrounding buildings and character of the area.
The standard business ordinance gives the board authority to review the designs of chain stores. After negotiating with the city's planning department, CVS agreed to keep the outside of the building most as it is now. There will be a 10-foot tall illuminated sign on the side of the building. Steve Smith, who represented CVS and the developer, said the drugstore is needed.
It's an important element in a downtown neighborhood. It's one we haven't had for many decades, but this would bring it back. It's important for walkability, it's important for the residents that live down there, and it's important for the employees that work down there. It's not just the pharmacy, but also the convenience store that it brings. So it really provides walkable shopping for convenience and for pharmacy, which otherwise, at least the pharmacy part, you would have to drive in someplace. And most of the convenience stuff, you'd have to drive someplace too.
This will be the fifth CVS location in Bloomington. Smith said the company would employ between 30 and 50 people. He didn't say how many of those jobs would be part-time. There is a parking lot next to the building, but that is expected to be gone soon. Craig Forgey, the company T.M. Crowley & Associates, said he's not sure when the company will construct a new building there.
We do have the intention of building a second building adjacent to it, but right now it's really speculative as far as time frame. Mm-hmm. We'd like to get in there and do it as soon as possible, but we'd really like to line up some tenants and get a good idea of what we'd like to build there before we actually get started on it.
T.M. Crowley is set to buy the property from Old National Bank, who still owns the building and the parking lot. T.M. Crowley, which is based in Indianapolis, would then rent to CVS. County Assessor Judy Sharp said she was happy CVS would not own the building. The company has fought legal battles in the past to keep its property taxes low.
The only thing I was a little concerned about was CVS moving in there. But I have been assured that CVS is not owning the building. They're just renting the building. So is that correct? They're just rentals. Okay, so I'm fine with this. I just didn't know. I just really wanted to, you know, I was a little concerned that CVS was going to build another site here and appeal it as soon as they got up and running. But since they're just renting the building, maybe we'll be okay.
The board later voted unanimously to approve a permit for the business. It also approved a variance for the drugstore signs. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Doug Storm.
And I'm Maria McKinley. Support for the Daily Local News comes from Smithville, a local provider of internet, phone, and TV service over a stabilized fiber optic network, serving Monroe, Greene, Owen, Lawrence, Brown, and Morgan counties. More information on Smithville's full line of services is available at 812-876-2211 or smithville.net.
The election board did not receive any reassuring updates regarding poll workers in their meeting last week. WFHB News Director Allison Bektesh has the report.
Reporting for WFHB, this is Allison Bektesh. The final day to register to vote in this fall's election is October 6th, 1 week from today. The very next day, early voting begins, allowing the electorate a full month before Election Day to cast their ballot for their preferred political leaders. The Monroe County Election Board met last week and discussed the preparations and process for Election Day, Tuesday, November 4th, 2014. Monroe County has a history of being short on poll workers for the election, and the three-member board acknowledged this year, too, They are a little behind where they prefer to be for recruiting and training Republican and Democratic volunteers to help at the poll locations on Election Day. Republican Representative Brian Lemon said that he had not received an update regarding how many Republicans were willing to help with the elections. And Board Chair and Democratic Representative Lorraine Farrell said that the Democrats were doing well, but still had spaces to fill.
I had a conversation with Riley Parr last night, kind of a rehash of what we were saying here, is that he had make upwards of 6 calls to these individuals. They were not returning his calls. He has them on his sheet, but has not put everything on their sheet. He said that will be done as of Sunday. I think he's made all the calls he can. He's just, people aren't returning his call. He said that's the big thing.
So after Sunday, we should be able to get into that document and see those updates.
Yes.
Great. Okay, I'm gonna make a note of that. Technically, 19 and one half days left until this is turned over to the clerk's office.
Okay.
Now I'm going to give you a quick update on the Democratic recruiting. I don't know if you're aware of this, Brian, but just to give you a sense of this, the Republicans are needing to recruit 92 total people. Mm-hmm. The Democrats, because we have the inspectors that we're recruiting, we are recruiting 130 people. At this point, we have signed up 89 of the 130. And to break that down, it's 31 of the 34 inspectors have agreed to. We have those filled. 18 of the 34 judges have been signed up. 39 of the 61 clerks are signed up, and 100% on the sheriffs. We have one sheriff and we've got him recruited. So that's good. At this point, only 18 have signed up for training on the Democratic side. I was looking at the poll sites that were complete on the Democratic side too, and right now 10 are solidly in place out of the 34. Full. The Democratic staff is full. And there are many others that are close. So again, hopefully we'll see some great results after Sunday.
The board spoke about campaign signs, as well as the legal and illegal tactics that candidates and their staff use to promote themselves using the signs. County Clerk Linda Robbins said that a few complaints have come in regarding campaign signs blocking views along right-of-way traffic areas, but that the city has not yet intervened with the placement of signs.
One thing I have noticed is that the signs that are going up in the political signs are in public right-of-ways. I try to educate most of the people I run into what's going on, but there are certain, those signs are setting up on state highways and on state highways right-of-way, which need to be removed.
Yes, we've gotten complaints about the signage in the right-of-ways and medians, but the city hasn't done anything about it as of this point. Generally, if you put it in a public utility easement, they'll pull it. I want to make a comment about signage in candidates and candidates' teams that put out signs. This tends to be a very competitive time of the year when signs start going up, there are some candidates or their teams that will remove another candidate's or their opponent's signs once that's been put up. I would ask that as a public servant, you have the minimum to be kind even to your competitor.
The example you gave, Linda, of somebody pulling a candidate pulling another person's sign and planting theirs there, that's illegal. That is just plain and simple illegal.
During the invitation for public comment, Jim Bader requested that the state of Indiana do away with political signs outside of polling places. Bader said that people should already know who they are voting for before they go to the polls. The board agreed with him regarding the placement of the signs and spoke about how voters inform themselves about candidates and how they choose who they vote for.
The one study that I've seen, and I cannot remember the true numbers, that a large portion of people make their decisions when they're actually in the voting booth.
That's stupid.
Well, guess what? That's America. And that's their choice. And they don't even know who the candidates are walking in. And there he says, there's maybe half of them know exactly who they're going to vote for walking in the door. The other ones get in there and take a coin, flip it.
It is generally true that a large number of people do not start investigating the candidates and going on their websites or et cetera until 1 to 2 weeks before the election day. Now, with the advent of early voting, that's probably changed somewhat.
Thank you so much.
Start to look into candidates.
If you want to learn about where to find out about a candidate, you can come on to the Monroe County Election Board website at monroecountyvoters.us, and you can look up who is on your ballot. And once you have done so, there are a number of groups in Monroe County that have gone to great lengths to provide educational material to anybody who is interested about a candidate.
The election board also heard reports from support staff regarding voter registration efforts both in senior homes and on campus.
We've delivered voter registration packets and requests, any blank forms for requests for absentee voting by mail and absentee voting by travel board forms to 13 senior residential communities in Monroe County. And they are thrilled to have them delivered to them as opposed to having to come. It is so nice to see the positive outpouring of interest. The other thing we're going to be working on after the election, more so than focused in the next month, is making it a little easier to update voter registration addresses when someone moves into these communities, so that it's kind of an automatic process as part of their, you know, moving in procedures, as opposed to waiting for us now to update an address. So that'll be after the election.
That's a great idea.
Yeah,
that's exciting.
Indiana Secretary of State Connie Lawson, who is running against Democrat Beth White for the statewide position, sent out notifications earlier this summer stating that nearly 260,000 people were at risk of being removed from voter rolls if they do not vote in an election prior to 2017. This is Allison Bechtesh for WFHB.
The clerk's office ran successful public tests of the electronic voting equipment last week.
Support for WFHB comes from Blooming Foods Market and Deli, your locally grown co-op grocery since 1976. Blooming Foods features natural, organic, local, and fair trade food and garden items with support for small farmers, co-op producers, and local food artisans. Blooming Foods Market and Deli on 2nd and Fess at Elm Heights, on East 3rd near College Mall, West 6th near the Courthouse Square, and right up your alley at Kirkwood and Dunn.
Now it's time for Activate, our weekly segment spotlighting people working for positive change in our community.
Welcome to Activate, featuring tales of inspiration from local citizens who stand up for what they believe in, and encouraging you to find your cause, live your passion, make a difference. Volunteer.
My name is Andrea Jobe. I've been a volunteer coordinator with the Rooftop Garden at Menaway House for 3 years now. So I've been able to see this project evolve over time, which has been very exciting. The rooftop sits on top of Menaway House. It's a facility that serves women and children affected by domestic violence. This garden provides a safe place for healing and learning. And we grow all kinds of things up there, so it's always an exciting time. What inspires me the most about the rooftop garden is that it touches on several different societal needs, including just adding to the food supply of the community, but also the domestic violence shelter. Also educating community, especially the shelter youth. And it also, it just has a wonderful sustainability story, and it includes water collection, composting, upcycling, and reuse of materials, and many other things as well. I think we provide an experience to the shelter residents that they might not have otherwise. You can absolutely see it in their faces. You can see it in the kids' faces when they've learned something new or when they've picked a fresh vegetable from the vine. You can see it in the faces of the women, especially when they thank the volunteers constantly for their hard work. I will say the education program we have, it's very successful. Once a week, we meet with the kids of the shelter and teach them a lesson, whether it's biology related or math related. It somehow ties into gardening. But I will say that it has been reported that all students living in the shelter advanced to the next grade in school this year. So although other, you know, other programs, after school programs at the shelter definitely played a huge role in that, we take pride in knowing that we were a major part as well. You know, it's a great feeling to see the residents just so engaged and curious and excited. You know, I've had multiple women on several occasions tell me that, you know, when they left their abuser, they also left their gardens. And it's pretty sad, because I think gardening for many people is, it's healing, it's enjoyment, it's calming, and it's, you know, it's also a way to produce your own food, which is very exciting. So for that to be taken away from someone, I can imagine it's pretty difficult. The interaction with the children, they're very excited. They're eating vegetables that I would never have touched at their age, you know, and that's very inspiring. I think for us, that's a great indication that what we're doing really matters, and it does have a big effect on the development of these children, and hopefully it inspires them well into the future. After working with this project, I certainly see the world in a different light. The need for food is out there, especially here in Monroe County, and the need for education is also out there. So it's definitely opened my eyes. Thanks for listening. My name is Andrea Jobe, and I'm with the Rooftop Garden at Middleway House.
You may visit the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network website to see a full organizational profile and current volunteer needs at bloomingtonvolunteernetwork.org. Now here's a rundown of volunteer opportunities in Bloomington and Monroe County.
For the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network, I'm Lucy Shake with three ways to elevate your volunteer experience in Bloomington. The Rooftop at Middleway House is currently seeking garden and education volunteers. You can be a part of this highly rewarding urban agriculture project that focuses on methods of container gardening, water collection, vermicomposting, and youth education. They are looking for dedicated volunteers who are interested in designing a self-sustaining, less labor-intensive garden layout using a drip irrigation system for next spring. Or you can get ready to launch your volunteer experience at one of the upcoming Mother Hubbard's Cupboard volunteer orientations. They will tell you all you need to know about this food pantry that provides not only non-perishable foods, but produce straight from their own volunteer-maintained gardens. Or lift up those in need by volunteering for a regular shift at the community kitchen. Prep and serving shifts are available 6 days a week. Find one that fits your schedule. And that's a look at just some of the ways you can connect to your community through volunteering. For WFHB and the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network, I'm Lucy Shake.
You've been listening to Activate, a co-production of WFHB and the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network, working together to build an empowered, vibrant, and engaged community. For Bloomington Community Radio, I'm Jennifer Whitaker. All episodes of Activate are available online at wfhb.org/news/activate.
This has been the Daily Local News on WFHB, supported by Smithfield, your Indiana communications company, at smithfield.net, and by Blooming Foods Market in Deli, your locally grown co-op grocery. Today's headlines were written by Kathy Norton, along with Joe Crawford for Cats Week, a partnership with Community Access Television Services. Our feature was produced by Allison Bechtish.
Activate is produced by Jennifer Whitaker in partnership with the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network. Our engineer is Chris Martin. Our theme music is provided by The Impossible Shapes. Managing producer is Joe Crawford. Executive producer is Allison Bechtesh. For WFHB, I'm Doug Storm.
And I'm Maria McKinley. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported, independent daily news program, recognized among the best newscasts and breaking news coverage in 2013 by the Indiana Professional Chapter of the Society of Professional Journalists.
You can be a part of our award-winning news team. Send inquiries to news@wfhb.org. Stay tuned for Bring It On, our local forum on African American people and culture, coming up next on WFHB.
The Daily Local News is produced by a staff of over 50 volunteers
working in the WFHB News and Public Affairs Department.
Comments, suggestions, and story ideas
may be submitted directly to our news staff via email.
The address is news@wfhb.org.